You are now listening to the Voice of San Diego Podcast Network. For more information, visit voiceofsandiego.org/podcasts.
Hello, and thanks for listening to the Kept Faith Podcast. I'm Nick McCann, and I'm on the way to Petco Park with Travis Russell.
Hey, go Padres!
Woo!
Yeah, this
is a new format we're using. We're going to a game. It is the Kept Faith's 150th episode, and we're celebrating by going down to Petco Park to see the Padres play the Seattle Mariners, the first game of a Vetter Cup series.
2019, here we go.
Yeah. So we're really excited. This has been a fun journey getting to 150. And sadly, we just heard bad news that Anderson Espinosa went down with a second Tommy John surgery. I haven't read all the details yet, Travis, but how do you feel about that? I was looking forward to seeing him maybe in the next year and a half or so.
It's very strange because I feel bad for him, but I feel like we have so much talent now that it doesn't affect the team as much. But personally, I feel bad for the guy. Like, we really wanted him to do well, and he had so much potential. But this setback is a big one. The second Tommy John is not something to write home. I mean, you know what I mean? It's not something to take lightly. It's a big deal.
Well, I got to say, I just talked the proper amount of shit to my wife, who's a Red Sox fan. You know, Anderson was part of that deal that involved Drew Pomerantz and caused a bunch of problems for the Padres. AJ Preller got suspended. This seems... We always wanted Anderson Espinosa to come up and be good, obviously, because it would help the team. But it was loaded because of what happened to our rock star GM at the time. You know, it seemed like they overreacted, and I don't know. I don't want to get back into that, but this is a bummer. This is like he's a piece that was supposed to go with Mackenzie Gore and Chris Paddock, and he had the upside that, you know, really could have changed the franchise. So we're heading down here. We're on the 163, and we're headed down to Tailgate Park. Travis, a lot of stuff's been talked about this week about Andy Green. Do you think where are you on Andy Green? It seems like everybody's been weighing in, like, whether or not he should be fired. I don't think he should be, but I'll let you go.
I definitely don't think he should be, and I was a big fire Bud Black guy. I felt like there was a time when that needed to happen. Green is now is not the time. It's in no way managerial decisions, regardless of the lineup and Kinsler and second base and all those things. Green is not responsible right now, especially this early in the season. Now, by the All-Star break, if we're still flirting with 500 and he starts making crazy decisions and defending Kinsler like he has done and shouldn't have a couple of times, then we can start calling for his head. But we're way too early in the season for Green to be culpable for anything right now.
Right. Yeah, it does seem like we talked about this last week with Kevin Acey, and it does seem like the two problem areas that people are freaking out about is second base and catcher. Nobody's hitting at those positions, really. And, you know, it does seem like there's a strain of people online and people just in the Padres universe that are looking at Andy Green as sort of stunting the development of Francisco Mejia and Luis Urias. Like, I don't know if I'm ready to go there yet, but, I mean, the people that are playing, you know, Austin Hedges and Ian Kinsler aren't really hitting. I think that's part of the problem. But I have a hard time blaming the manager on you know, lineup construction. It seems like that's a dangerous road to go down.
Yes, and even though I'm so confused about Urias and why they even brought him up just to send him back down after 24 at-bats, that is not Green. That is like an organizational thing. There's way more people making the decision about who's coming up and who's coming down than just Green. I think what he's doing with this clubhouse right now and shifting in with a Manny all-star and, you know, trying to figure out that whole dynamic, I think so far it's been pretty well, going pretty well. Our clubhouse seems to be having a blast. You know, the sugar cane chop is one of the greatest things so far of the year as far as sports go, and something, I don't know, it's just been great. So there's definitely not like a clubhouse cancer or something that he's leaving on the table. He's made a few weird decisions, but nothing that, you know, this early in the season we should be second guessing. So yeah, Green is not even close to hot seat. It's not even warm yet in my book.
Yeah. All right, well, we're going to ask some more people down here. We're going to meet up with Dallas McLaughlin. He's going to weigh in on some of these topics, and we'll see who else we run into. Thanks for listening to the 150th episode of The Kept Faith.
Hey, congratulations to us, Nick. Great job, buddy. Yeah.
What if we crashed right now? That'd be great. It's probably the best.
I was in a car accident when I was young, and it just, knock on wood, it doesn't happen to me. I'm a very good driver, Nick. We're in good hands.
All right, let's turn on some grunge. Yeah. All right, hey Travis, we're inside the ballpark now. Hopefully this is a quiet enough spot. We're overlooking the K Street promenade, I guess, walking spot. We're over the bullpen. What do you think about the bullpen so far, how Andy Green's managed that? It seems like that's part of the criticism of him. We want to get other people's opinions on that, but what are you thinking so far?
I think he's done a fair job. Our starters, our young guys, have been doing fairly well, but you can't burn them out at these early games. There was a couple questioning times I questioned when he pulled a guy, but I think our bullpen's okay. I don't think they've been overtaxed so far. And I hate to say it again and like rely on all this talent we have, but we have a lot of talent. So let's get these guys that are getting up there in the, you know, Fisher Cup bait territory, get them innings and see if they stick or not. Otherwise, someone's there to take their spot. So I have no criticisms with how Andy's been managing the bullpen. And our pitching has been one of the bright spots this year. I think it's way outperformed what any expectations were of it.
Well, it seems like he doesn't have a lot of fully formed starters to work with, and that's why he's going to the bullpen a lot earlier. But, you know, there is a question of whether or not this is sustainable. Maybe this is something that they're looking at when they look at a guy like Dallas Keuchel.
Yeah, well, but didn't Strom go like eighth the other day? One run? I mean, I don't know. I think that as the year goes on, I'm not ready to pull the trigger on a big pitcher right now. I honestly, right now, Keuchel has no interest in me at all. I'm happy with the way things are going right now.
Yeah, so what do you think about the midweek crowd that we see so far? I mean, it seems like there's a lot more Padres gear wearing people. You know, there's a lot more people showing their pride, even for a weekday game.
Yeah, and it feels like a Saturday night on a Tuesday. It's amazing. And I was just saying as we were walking in, usually it feels like even, you know, whatever visiting team fan gear versus Padres fan gear. Now it feels like we're overwhelmingly Padres wearing.
You're wearing your Mega Manny T-shirt. You've already gotten asked about it like three times.
I think the Padres are trying to figure out who made it. So be wary out there, Padres. They're watching.
Did you realize how hard it was for me to just hold back and say, "Hey, man, check out our shirt that we got coming for our patrons. Check it out." You know, I won't do that on the street, but you know, we do have a T-shirt coming. It's for our patrons, Patreon.com, The Kept Faith. Check it out. Dallas designed it, or Travis designed it. Sorry, but check that out. Join. Yeah, it does feel like a different vibe. I mean, I came to a Wednesday game during the week, obviously, and like there was a lot more people. I felt like at that game, but this seems like a pretty decent crowd. I guess Seattle draws a little bit, but.
And it is Taco Tuesday, so there is that. We can grab a couple 250 tacos. But this is my second Taco Tuesday, and I think this is already bigger than last week.
Yeah, and the prices are pretty good, right? It's like $2.50 a taco, which seems insane for a ballpark.
It is. It is insane, and that's why we come on Tuesdays. One of the many reasons.
All right. Well, we're waiting for Dallas McLaughlin. Story of our lives. But yeah, so we're gonna talk to him in a bit and probably meet up with people after the fourth inning. Go Padres.
I seem to recognize your face, haunting familiar, yeah. I can't seem to place it, cannot find the candle of thought to light your name. Lifetimes are catching up with me.
All right, we're at the seats with Dallas McLaughlin. What's up, Dallas?
Oh, hey, Nick. Hey.
Before we started talking on this recording, you seem to have some thoughts about the Francisco Mejia and Austin Hedges situation.
Well, hold on. I don't want us to get sued for Soundgarden in the background of our podcast. Well, here's the thing. You know, no one's hitting, as you pointed out, between Urias, Kinsler, Hedges, and Mejia. So when you look at that situation, you have to decide who's your future, who matters in the long run. And as AC, who was on the podcast last week, who's great, I love that episode, he pointed out that he thinks Mejia is going to get traded. You know, he thinks he's going to get moved, which is fine, but no one's going to want him right now. So what are you going to move him for? That's kind of the concern. And also, if you want him here, then you need to let him hit. You can't let him hit every fifth pitcher. You can't let him catch every fifth game or every third game. He needs to get at bats, you know. He can play in the outfield. He can play first. Like, he needs to get at bats. Not play well. Like, now, don't judge me. But at least you can get him ways to get at bats.
So a big question about the Mejia situation and even, like, the Ian Kinsler, Urias situation is, like, is Andy Green not making the right decisions to develop these players? Do you put it on Andy Green, or do you think it's more of a system?
Oh, man, the Andy Green fired question. Should he be fired? Well, last year I said yes, and I still think that that's probably a yes, but, like, the problem with firing Andy Green is what happens next. Like, what do you get if you fire Andy Green? Everybody assumes it's going to be Rod Brajas, which is fine, but when's the last time you can remember a situation where a manager was fired, a new manager came in, and that team all of a sudden went to the World Series? Like, I can't remember that ever happening. Maybe Jack McKeon in Florida in 2004 or 2003 with the Marlins. That's, like, the only, and I don't even know if he came in that season. He might have come in at the beginning of the season instead of halfway through. But that's the only time I can remember a manager being changed and that year the team going all the way. I just don't know if Rod Brajas has that in him. It's not fair to put it all on Andy Green. Do I think he's a good manager? No. Do I think he's making the right decisions? No. Do I think he has complete roster control? No.
I mean, I'm pretty much. Oh, Manny Margot just missed a ball. Uh-oh. It's all right.
There's a lot more Mariners fans here than I thought there'd be.
They need to shut up. Sorry.
What? Yeah. Sorry. What did you? Did you ask me a question? It's okay that it's loud, Nick.
I know. I'm with you. I don't think that they should fire the manager in the middle of the season like they did with Bud Black. I think I was on the side of, like, let him finish out that season. I think if Andy Green is proving himself to be bad, I don't see the point in, like, making Rod Brajas the manager halfway through the season, you know?
Well, you're going to wind up with the same situation as Pat Murphy. You're going to bring in a guy who's like, oh, he needs to be the guy. And then he comes in and the team doesn't get better, and then you're like, oh, he's not the guy. It's like you know, sometimes the team's just not there yet. And everybody is so excited because we played so well to start the season, which I understand. But then what happens after that? You know, you kind of come down to earth a little bit because the team isn't ready. It wasn't built to win everything this year. So you need to put that into perspective, and you need to go, maybe it's not all Andy Green's fault. Do I see him as the long-term solution at manager? No, but I've never hidden that before. So I just think that putting it all on him is incorrect. And what if Rod Brajas came in and the team plays the same as they're playing now? Then all of a sudden, do we go out and get Pat Murphy again? I mean, what's the answer? It's kind of ridiculous.
So this is the first game you've been to this season. Like, we just saw Tatis, you know, live and in person. How are you feeling with Tatis so far?
Do you remember that scene in Rudy where Rudy's dad gets to Notre Dame Stadium for the first time, like in South Bend, and he, like, starts to tear up a little bit?
I just nodded. Yes, I do.
Yeah, of course. I mean, I know you do. That's kind of how I felt watching Tatis. Is it was a great moment. That and Machado. First time I got to see them live. I actually purchased the MLB at-bat video feed this year so I could watch the team from afar. Because in Temecula, where I live, I'm not blacked out for whatever reason. So I get to watch them. But this is the first time live, and I mean, he had an 8-pitch at bat to lead off the game. That's not something we saw last year with the Padres. It's gorgeous.
Yeah, I mean, to me, he looks and feels like almost like the antidote to, like, the boring, bland players we've had pretty much the entire Petco Park era. I mean, this guy, he's exciting. I mean, he's more exciting than anybody we've had from like the beginning of their career at like the age 20. I mean, we've never really experienced anything like this except for like Tony Gwynn, I think.
Well, I think the last shortstop we had, Khalil Green, he had those two seasons where you were like, this is the dude, you know, and then we sent him off back. And but I haven't felt this way about a shortstop since that great Khalil season. And it is kind of a weird feeling to just, it's a weird feeling to have a shortstop and a third baseman that I'm not worried about. I haven't had that feeling in like over a decade.
Yeah, we're sitting on the left side right now, and they look great.
Well, here's the thing, also, I'm not even worried about Kinsler. I know I'd rather see Urias, like, obviously, because I think he's the future, but I'm not worried about Kinsler. I'm not worried about Hosmer. Hosmer's been hitting lately. You know, he's going to hit 240, and he's going to hit 20-something dingers, and that's what you're going to get with Hosmer, and we always knew that. But I'm not worried about it. You know, Will Myers is turning it on. Manny Margot's having a good season so far. You know, if Franmil can actually hit anything other than a home run, that would be nice. I'd like to see Franchi back. I kind of miss Franchi. But, like, I'm not worried. Like, that's the thing. Like, people are freaking out on Twitter about this team, like, getting the 500 again. The pitching's not there yet. They always said it wasn't going to be there. It's not there. We have to wait another season for the pitching to be there. Just enjoy it. This is the least stressed I've been in a Padres season in a long time.
So you're going to make it out to some Storm games coming up? You got to see Mackenzie Gore.
I am. I re-upped my media pass, and I'm excited. I'm going to go see Storm games, do some Storm casts. It'll be exciting. They have some really interesting players in Lake Elsinore right now. Hopefully we'll get to interview a couple again. That was really fun getting to interview Paddock last year and see how far he's come in just a year. It's really, really amazing. Hudson Potts is doing well. Ty France is doing well. I mean, I'm just excited. It's like, you know, I actually care about watching the Padres this year. I think I went to one game last year, and it was just to get my free Padres Ireland hat. Travis just left.
Travis, no, we don't. This is the 150th episode of the Kept Faith in this iteration. I might title it From Middlebrooks to Tatis, but...
Is this really the 150th episode? Yeah!
On the Jumbotron! We're doing a podcast! So we're back. We're in the bowels of Petco Park. We just got on the Jumbotron. Let's talk about it.
Yeah, now we're famous now, so that'll be nice.
We've had quite the last 30 minutes. We were on the Jumbotron. The Padres scored 3 runs. It's been quite a time.
Yeah, Franmil just hit a bomb, and the place erupted. I mean, everybody's having a blast. This is great.
It is. It's much better when the Padres score runs. I really enjoy the games that they're scoring and the other team isn't. It's what it's about, right?
Yeah, it's one of those things where, like, when you score runs, you tend to win. But when the other team doesn't score wins, they tend to lose. Yeah, it's, you know, classic X's and O's.
And there's just something so visceral about Franmil hitting the ball hard. It, like, makes your skin tingle, and it's just fun. Lots of fun.
We had just got done talking about how I'm not concerned about this team, and then, like, they go and score 3 runs on 5 hits. Can you remember last year anytime we scored 3 runs on 5 hits? I don't. I remember a lot of runners stranded. It's great.
Well, Austin Hedges just ended that inning. You had some thoughts about you think Mejia should be starting, basically.
Well, yeah, we were talking about that a minute ago, and Travis is going to disagree with me because he's a fucking pro or whatever he is now. But I think Mejia is a top 10 prospect for a reason. He just is. And the reason is because he has a lot of talent, a lot of raw power, he's a good hitter. He might not be the best defender at the plate. I understand that. But the problem is that he's a good player. So you either play him and let him get at bats and figure out if he can actually make it at this level, or you don't and you ship him somewhere else and let him. And but like the thing is they're not playing him. So even if they shipped him somewhere else, what are they going to get? They're going to get some second-rate reliever because he's not hitting. They have to let him hit if they're going to ship him. And if they're not going to let him hit, then they can't ship him anywhere. It's like they're putting himself in a corner, and they're playing Austin Hedges, who is also not hitting. So I just, you know.
Well, he's hitting-esque. Like, he's kind of hitting. Here's the thing, though.
He's kind of hitting.
Hedges. He's had some hits.
That may as well be his walk-up song, some hits.
Yeah, some hits. Exactly. Here's the thing, though, and this is the problem the Padres have, if they have any, is that Mejia can't handle this staff. It's a really big deal when you have basically a bunch of starters that can't go more than six innings due to their greenness, you know, their youngness. And so when you have someone as young and as green as them handling them, no one's being taken care of very well. And so offensively right now, I don't know what to say. Like, Mejia needs at-bats, but he doesn't need them in. I mean, we don't have a spot for him to get them in the major leagues because of our staff. So maybe if we get one or two, you know, free agent pitchers or something, then Mejia can get his at-bats. But right now, you can't have him catching, regardless of his defense, just how he handles the pitchers alone right now for the Padres, in my opinion.
Do you think that it's possible that the organization views Austin Hedges as an unfinished product as a hitter himself and that he needs at-bats? I don't care because I'm over him, but I mean, it's... Do you think that's possible? He's not even that much older, so it's...
No.
And he still has a chance to grow into being a better hitter. So if you take away at-bats from Austin Hedges, you know, does that stunt him? I mean, I think the consensus among most people online around Padres, you know, Twitter or whatever, it's...
Okay, well, and they know what they're talking about, for sure. But, yeah, everybody on Padres Twitter is a perfect manager of baseball.
But it does sound like... People think that Austin Hedges is just, this is what he is, and there's no room for growth for him. So we should just give it all his at-bats to Mejia. And I don't know if that's how the organization's looking at it.
But see, that's the thing. You're saying give all his bats to Mejia. Give any at-bats to Mejia. Mejia's catching, what, a game a week right now? Maybe two games a week right now? Like, you're not letting Mejia progress because Hedges is handling the staff. But the problem is we're not supposed to win this year. Like, we're not supposed to go to the World Series this year. So what does it matter if Hedges is making the pitchers better, is keeping runs out the board because of it? What is it in the long run that matter? And you shut your face. In the long run, Travis, does it matter more that Mejia, a top 10 prospect, is hitting and doing well, or does it matter that our pitching staff did well in a year that's not supposed to matter?
If Mejia is going to play at the major leagues as catcher, he's got to learn how to catch. And I say learn how to catch. He knows how to catch the baseball, but as far as the position of catcher, it is, he's a fish out of water. So if the Padres want to really expose his bat, they got to do some Will Myers-esque experiments with him. Put him out in left. Sort of at third, yeah. Platoon him with Manny, you know. No, but like a corner outfield position, I don't know. But him at catcher is not the way that he's going to get bats, because I'll tell you why it's beneficial. The growth of these pitchers. Like, they're learning right now. It's a learning thing for the future, not trying to win now. And if they're just going out there and throwing the baseball and not learning how to pitch because their catcher is not facilitating pitching, just catching, then that's, to me, the long-term damage.
Do you have anything to add to that?
I think Travis is a moron.
Let's switch to beer.
He's totally right. He's totally right.
No, I get what you're saying 100%. That is the conundrum, is that the rumor, you know, last year is they brought Mejia in to scare Hedges into playing better. Like, hey, we have this guy now, and we have him, and he's going to be the catcher if you can't put it together. And Hedges started hitting at the end of last year, and he started hitting at the beginning of the season, but he's still not hitting well. No. He's hitting like a bad Molina brother. He's not doing well, but he can still handle the staff. You know what I mean? Like, so it's just, you wonder what is the point if the point is just having a good staff and having a catcher who's going to handle the staff and occasionally run into one, then sure, Hedges is your guy.
And they're for hugs and stuff. We need a catcher that hugs our pitchers.
But the problem is now we have a top 10 prospect sitting on the bench not doing anything because you want to go with Hedges. You're screwing this guy and you're screwing your chances of getting anything for him. So something has to be done.
And you're saying that there's no benefit to Mejia getting AAA at-bats. No benefit to AAA pitching.
I don't. At this point, he's 24, I think. I don't know if there is.
Could we send him up to Lake Elsinore and have him hit for the other team when we play them so he could hit against our good pitching up there?
If he was in Lake Elsinore, I would like that because then I could go see him.
You know, every day when I wake up, I feel like a bad Molina brother, but then I have coffee, and I feel like a good Molina brother. I just wanted to say that.
But isn't it fun, though, as I was saying earlier, I'm not worried about this team. Isn't it fun that we're finding problems instead of all of the problems are just present? Like, Padres Twitter and everybody, we are searching for the problems, and yeah. We're finding them. The bottom of the order is pretty bad right now.
It probably comes down to them. They had a bad week.
Yeah, I mean, that's what it is. Yes, it's a bad
great.
Week.
So
I mean,
great.
We're arguing at our about our top prospect catcher that's not getting enough playing time.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what the worst problem to have ever.
So, Dallas, you're keep Andy Green, start Mejia, start Urias, or leave Kinsler in?
Start Urias.
Yeah,
keep Mejia, and I'm only keeping Andy Green because there's no point in firing him this year. There really isn't. Because if you want to have a new manager, you need to give him spring training with the players. You need to give him the time with the players. Be realistic. I mean, if any student of the game will tell you, and people are going to roll their eyes when I said student of the game, but unfortunately, I love the game of baseball. I've been watching it forever. Again, I'll point out, tell me a time when a manager took over halfway through the season or even 75% or 25% away into the season and had a successful outcome. It's very, very few and far between. You want Barajas to be successful, he needs to have a spring training with this team. So there's no use in firing Andy Green right now. It's not going to help anybody. It's only going to hurt people.
Yeah, and the guy you're going to replace him with is sitting next to him. So it's like, what's the point, really? They're doing it already.
I say call Don Zimmer. Is he still alive?
All right, before we get out of here, Dallas, you had your first Swinging Friar Ale. Did I already ask you this? I can't remember. Okay. You had a Swinging Friar Ale. Okay, you got to make a decision. Is it better than 394?
It's not better than 394, but it's not bad. I think that people's complaints about Ballast Point are stupid or moronic. And if you're out there complaining about, like, Ballast Point as a brewery, making a Padre, like, you're complaining about a huge brewery, like, concerning themselves with your team. You're an idiot. Like, you're a moron. Like, just go complain about, like, you're the same people who go to Gulls games and buy $2 Bud Lights. Get over yourself. I can't understand it. Like, people get mad at Ballast Point for doing something so well that somebody gave them $1 billion so that they could have it. Like, none of us have ever done anything well enough for someone to come in and be like, here's $1 billion for you to just go do whatever you want for the rest of your freaking life.
All right, we're here with David Marver from the Gwintelligence podcast, second time guest on the Ket Faith. It's our 150th episode. Are you proud of us?
I'm very proud of you guys. Yeah, actually, a couple weeks ago, I reached out to Padres Jagoff and I was like, hey, do we have the longest running Padres podcast? And he instantly shot me a message back like, Ket Faith. And I was like, what, really? I was like, because I didn't realize you guys had taken a break and then come back together, but you guys have been doing this for like 9 times as long as we have. So
we established in 2008.
Yeah. And we were 2013 or something. So I was very far off.
You guys were before the Preller trades, the 2015 trades. We got inspired by the Preller trades. So the 150 episodes are between, you know, Preller's December and what's happening now. So what's happening now, David? A lot of people are going after Andy Green's head. You're leading the charge on that, I think.
No, I wouldn't say I'm leading the charge. I would say that from a strategic perspective, there's a lot that he leaves on the table every game. But, you know, I think it's a little premature to just outright fire him at this point. So I wouldn't say I'm leading a brigade. I'm a very strategic-minded person. Anytime I'm playing a game, be it Yahtzee, whatever it is, I'm always thinking about every single move. And so, you know, the one thing I do like now is that we're focusing on those tiny things in-game. Before, it was like big picture, like, dude, sign a freaking big player, you know, like, develop a farm system, like the big picture things. Now we can finally focus on the fact that he didn't pinch hit for a guy in the fifth inning, or did, or isn't playing the right guys on the lineup. You know, these small things that make it fun to go to a game and have conversations with your friends and argue. So I don't necessarily want him fired, but I'm still, you know, have that lens on him, and I'm watching every move and figuring out whether or not he's good at it. He's better than Bud Black. I definitely like him better than Bud Black, but I still think there are some things that he does that rub me the wrong way. Particularly with playing guys that are, you know, remind you of how Andy Green was a player, you know, the Perellas, and I think you see a bit of the Kinsler scrappiness getting more playing time as a result. But yeah, so I wouldn't say that I'm leading the charge, but I'm certainly vocal when he does something that I don't.
The two big problem areas are like second base and catcher, right? And a lot of people are starting to blame Andy Green for not giving the right opportunities for Urias and Mejia. I mean, I know where you land on Mejia, but yeah. Like, I mean, do you feel like he's actually being detrimental, or is it a more organizational decision?
Yeah, I mean, it's so hard to know whether it's organizational decision or not, but I would honestly like to have seen, I know Urias got sent down. I would have loved to have seen much more of a timeshare, if not a very heavy tilt towards Urias, at least for 100 plate appearances, and see if it stays the way it is, you know? But, sorry, there's an event here at the game that just happened. But, I mean, from a catching perspective, I was hoping to see a pretty even split between Mejia and Hedges, too. I understand why they're not, but, you know, I think that's one of those things that over time will play out. I think if Hedges is still hitting 190 or 200 by, you know, June, Mejia is going to get a lot more playing time. So, but I'd like to see, I mean, I've said it on the podcast before, catcher is the hardest position to stay healthy and, you know, and on top of your game at. I'd love to see them do much more of a close timeshare there. That's the one where I really think preserving Hedges is not, there's no downside to playing Mejia more. You learn more about Mejia. If he sucks, you know it faster. And if he doesn't, then great. You know that he doesn't suck. And at the same time, you're keeping Hedges more fresh. That's the one that I think bugs me a bit more. But I think as he learns the pitchers, I expect that he'll get more playing time. So
I just want, like, Hedges just hit a two-run home run during this. Just to throw that into the mix. Okay.
So
I think he's now at 191 then after that. He's batting 191 now.
Yeah, it means he's listening. He's
Mendoza on that one.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, like, I brought this up earlier with Dallas, but, like, do you think that the organization is probably looking at Hedges as not being a finished product offensively? Like, he's obviously clearly the best defensive catcher in the organization, I think. But, like, you know, would taking away at-bats from him hinder him to becoming, like, a Yadier Molina track type thing?
I mean, maybe. I think they're very different offensive players. Like, Hedges has shown some power at the major league level that Yadier took years to develop. But Yadier Molina's had great bat control his whole career. Like, you know, he hasn't struggled the way that Hedges has from a purely getting on base perspective, which is the most important thing offensively. I mean, they're batting him eighth. I think they know what he is, you know? So I think the way they use him from that perspective doesn't bug me. I mean, he's a great defensive catcher. He's got a little bit of pop, you know? And obviously he just hit another two-run home run, so I think he has four this year already. You know what you are. You know what you get with him. It's just a matter of, are you okay with the starting position player who's going to have an on-base percentage of like 270 at the end of the year? You know, I hope for, I have higher expectations. That's why I kind of would like to see Mejia get a longer run. I understand he's looked bad so far, but I think the organization, I think they kind of know what they have. I mean, if they thought he was more than that, he would be hitting higher in the lineup, and, you know, but, and they probably would have never even targeted Mejia by trade. I mean, I think that's maybe a bigger telling thing than anything else.
Well, do you think, you just mentioned it, so I was thinking the same thing. If Hedges was higher up in the lineup, like if he's a fifth hitter, do you think he has more success than batting eighth?
I think hitting eighth is tough. I mean, you get shit pitches, you know? It's like, and the pitcher's on deck, so it's, they're always going to be able to throw junk to you and be fine if they walk you because pitcher's coming up next. I don't envy that position in the batting lineup at all. I don't think, you know, there are some spots that you can hit that certainly help your numbers. Like hitting, you should see a higher walk rate for Hedges because he's hitting in front of the pitcher, but at the same time, he's not getting solid pitches to hit because they're just throwing him junk on the outside. And granted, I'm not checking the numbers right now to confirm this. This is just my general view of hitting eighth. It doesn't help him, certainly. If he was hitting in front of Manny Machado, I'm sure he'd be getting fastballs, you know, grooved to him on a 1-0 count, and he'd probably have a much higher batting average. But I just think that he's maybe not a great offensive player besides the occasional pop. And there's nothing wrong with that. It still makes him, at the very worst, it makes him the greatest backup catcher in baseball. Right, solid defensively with some pop. I'm just still not entirely sold that he's championship caliber as a starter.
I mean, like, what... from what, of all these starting pitchers, they all look like unfinished products. Like, of the guys that have been getting starts, who are you looking at now that are catching your eye? Is there anybody that jumps out, or is it pretty much these guys are B-plus ceiling guys?
Yes. I mean, I think Paddock's obvious, right? I think everyone's liked the way he's played. Margavichus has certainly surprised me. Before tonight, he's walked five guys tonight, But up until now, he's been very efficient, a lot of command. I look at him as, you know, a back-end starter for sure. I think the one that's, you know, I do like Lucchese. Strikes out a lot of guys. He's got some deception in his windup, left-handed. I think he'll stick. I don't know exactly what his ceiling is, but I would say there's one that I'm disappointed in. That's Lauer. I know that he's had some decent outings by earned runs perspective, but he still allows so many base runners. And that is just going to continue to be, you know, that ERA is going to creep up and up the more he continues to do that. First-round pick, I think you expect more out of him. But I was here for Strom's last start, and obviously he looked fantastic. It went eight innings, didn't walk anyone, which I think was even more promising than the eight innings. And he's got good stuff. So I think if you're looking from, like, a pure stuff perspective, he's the most impressive, even more impressive to me, honestly, than Paddock. Because Paddock's really just all about command. He can put the ball wherever he wants. He doesn't get quite as many swinging strikes from his stuff as Strom. So,
I mean, when I look at Strom and Paddock, I think I look at both of them as being these, man, in a playoff series, if they were like a long relief guy, like an Andrew Miller, or like with how the Brewers used Hader last year, like, yeah, they could be killers in that role. I don't know if they're starters, capital S starters, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think Paddock's a starter. I think I would be surprised if he didn't end up that way. But
the pitch limit doesn't bother you?
I mean, the pitch limit's understandable. He had Tommy John surgery like a year ago, you know. But I think there are some questions about whether or not he'll develop a third pitch. And generally, if you don't develop a third pitch, you end up in the bullpen. Strom, though, I totally see your side of it. I mean, that's essentially what it's been up until this year, and he doesn't have a very long history of going deep into games. He's got like a track record of one game. Like his most recent one. So, and there's nothing wrong with that. I think baseball in general is moving towards having multiple Swiss Army knives out of the pen. Next year, in particular, will make Strom more valuable because they're going to go to the three-pitch or three-batter minimum for every reliever. And so you want guys that can, in theory, go much further in your bullpen because you can't just left-right match up and do all that kind of stuff. So I would say, just to directly answer your question, Strom's the one that I think has stood out to me most because he'll certainly have value in that role, and you know, his stuff looks good. And I mean, it's hard not to be excited at this point with a lot of what we're seeing. But
okay, last question. It's been a debate on this podcast and around the stadium. Like, where do you land on the Fryer Ale versus 394 debate? It's not really a debate, but you have to pick a side.
All right. So I would, if I had to pick one to drink, it would be 394. Now, I don't know if that's because I've had 394 in the Amtrak up to L.A. for my best friend's bachelor party, and so I've got some sentimental feelings towards it.
That's fair.
But I would say that it's closer to my type of beer than the Swingin' Fryer Ale. Yeah.
Yeah, I was downstairs with Travis, and we were buying a Fryer Ale, and this girl said, like, F 390, or F Fryer Ale, 394 for life, you know. So what's changed? Like, the last time you lived in San Diego, you just moved back, and, like, what's the difference, like, just being at Petco Park now? Like, is it all tracked back to, like, Tatis and Machado? It's just, it's invigorated the whole fan base, right?
I think a lot of it is that, to be honest. Now, granted, I wasn't going very frequently before I moved. 2015, I did. But I see a lot of genuine excitement for the young players. Tatis, obviously, you know, you can just tell just by, if you just watch the behavior of people in the stands and how much they're paying attention. You know, for some of the other guys in the lineup, they're still not paying close attention. They're talking to friends, they're whatever, eating a hot dog on their phone. But when Tatis comes up, they're all watching what he's doing, you know? Yeah. And not just that, but defensively as well. You know, any ground ball is pretty exciting now, which is weird to think of. But defensively, a ground ball in the infield, like, is a potential highlight. We've seen a couple tonight. I think things have certainly changed in the aura of the team. I mean, it's hard to walk anywhere in the stadium without seeing Machado and Tatis jerseys. It used to be like, you know, you'd run into like a sarcastic Kristen Norfia jersey or something. But you're actually seeing players who are star players on the team right now. You're seeing kids walking around those jerseys. It's been a lot of fun.
Well, hey, Dave, thanks for coming on. Second time guest. You're going to get a set of steak knives in the mail soon. So we'd love having you on. We want to have you back in the studio again sometime. Yeah. But, yeah, check out the Gwyntelligence podcast. It's one of the must-listen podcasts for the golden age that we're experiencing now. So, all right. See you, man. Okay, Travis, we're taking off. We're leaving Tailgate Park.
3 hours after the game started. It was a long game.
Yeah, it was a long game. So what did we learn tonight?
We probably already knew this, but we definitely confirmed that Franimal hits the ball extremely hard consistently. He had two home runs tonight to one of the deepest parts of the park. It was very impressive. We also learned that Austin Hedges can hit home runs with the help of center fielders pushing the ball over the wall. Margavichus was solid tonight, had a lot of trouble finding the strike zone, but somehow stayed out of trouble. This team is exciting, and it's fun to watch, is what I learned.
Yeah. When I was leaving, I heard a couple talk about the Rockies score. They were looking at the other scores in the division, and they were like, really invested in it, and I feel like this is a different thing than when we started this iteration of the podcast. I mean, people are invested in the standings of the NL West, and it's different. And you know, when we started this at podcast one, it was like, hey, we're excited about Matt Kemp and Will Middlebrooks and, you know, James Shields, and a lot's happened. This is the 150th episode, and I'm glad I'm sharing it with you. I think this is important, and it feels like the San Diego sports fandom, whatever that is, like, has earned this in a way. It feels like we've fought for this, and we're getting what we deserve.
Yeah, it feels guilt-free, right? Like, a lot of, like, if we were to win the lottery or whatever, you'd feel like, oh, do I really deserve this? I don't know. But this feels right. It feels like we've put our dues in, and that the city of San Diego and true Padres fans have put in the time to really have a team that we can get behind and feel confident in, not only for this year, but for, like, the next, you know, 5 to 10 years. This is exciting. Something we can invest in emotionally, and it's just a lot of fun. And tonight was a great win.
Yeah, this is a Tuesday night battle between the Mariners and the Padres, and I wonder what it's going to be like if this team or next year's team actually makes a playoff series. I think the city's ready. It just feels like it's very ready.
Yeah, it's like a powder keg, right? And, like, we're trying to set it off, even though there's really no reason to. It's like a April Tuesday night game, but we want to celebrate. We want this team to do well. And, yeah, we're all just – it's a great feeling. It feels good to be in communion, if that's the right word, with your city. Like, it's awesome.
Yeah. All right, well, this concludes TKF 150. We got 150 in the books, and so Travis, I got to ask, who do you think is going to be the number one pick in the NFL draft?
Oh, gosh, the NFL. I honestly could not tell you.
The fast one.
The fastest guy, he probably played for Ohio State or Alabama. Yeah. Either one of those guys are going first.
All right, well, go Padres, keep the faith, and thanks for supporting us through this journey. I hope this episode was fun for you. You know, check out the patreon.com/thekeptfaith. You get a Bush League t-shirt if you want, and we're going to get those out soon. Support the voiceofsandiego.org. They do great work, and they've helped us immensely through this whole process, and we love that they support us. So check them out, and we'll see you next week. Bye.
Go Padres!
The show you just heard was part of the Voice of San Diego podcast network. To hear other great shows like the Voice of San Diego podcast, I Made It in San Diego, a show all about the people behind the region's businesses, the award-winning Culture Cast, the Kept Faith, a San Diego sports show, and more, please visit voiceofsandiego.org/podcasts. If you'd like to sponsor any of the podcasts, please email Aaron at voiceofsandiego.org. That's Erin at VOSD.org.